Good morning, Your Excellency Francesco Rutelli, Excellencies Ambassador, Permanent Representatives, Monsignor Fernando Chica, dear colleagues, friends, ladies and gentlemen. It is a great pleasure to welcome you today on behalf of the Director General to discuss the relationship between climate change and agriculture, in particular agroforestry. The Director General sent his best wishes for a successful meeting. Unfortunately, due to a last-minute commitment, he couldn't join us, but I am heeding his speech. I thank the Government of Italy for co-organizing this event with FAO in collaboration with the Fondazione Centro per un Futuro Sostenibile. Last week, we received here in FAO the visit of the President of the United Nations General Assembly, Ambassador Peter Thompson of Fiji. Ambassador Thompson has categorically in alerting us, if you do not change the way we do business, the temperature of the planet will hit levels in which it is not clear our civilization can function. We should not doubt it. We cannot take the risk. We have to act, and we have to act now. And agriculture and food systems are an important part of the solution to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions and promote adaptation to a changing climate, especially for poor family farmers of developing countries, many of them already food insecure. They are by far the most vulnerable. They need support to face extreme natural events, which are more frequent and intense. Ladies and gentlemen, I am just back from the United Nations Climate Conference, COP22, in Marrakesh. I was glad to see that COP22, as an African COP, has encouraged leaders to take action on climate change and food security simultaneously. It marked the recognition that agriculture and food systems are fundamental for sustainable development. They offer a triple win, tackling climate change, extreme poverty and hunger at the same time. It was the clear message from Marrakesh Action Proclamation and from the Global Action Agenda, co-organized by FAO, on agriculture and food security, forests and oceans. While the dual role of agriculture as a source of emission and as vulnerable to the impacts of climate change is recognized in the National Determined Contribution, NDCs, and National Adaptation Plan, NAPs, of most countries. Despite agriculture vulnerability to climate change, the total amount of climate finance allocated in 2014 to agriculture, forestry and other land use was disproportionately small, around represented 2% of the total amount of the global climate finance. And I repeat, 2% of the total amount of the global climate finance. Smallholder farmers already face numerous risks to agriculture production, and it is important to make sure that climate finance is being direct to agriculture, including forest, land use, fisheries, livestock, and others. Developing countries and poor rural communities need support. They are at risk. Investments in agriculture are fundamental to implement the 2030 Agenda and the Sustainable Development Goals. In addition, FAO trusts that countries will soon find consensus to approve a resolution on agriculture within the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change negotiations. In agriculture, adaptation and mitigation are two facets of the same coin, and we need to better explore the co-benefits of adaptation, mitigation, and development. Ladies and gentlemen, my last point is more focused on agroforestry, the theme of our discussion today. I would like to highlight that we are moving into a new paradigm shift for sustainable agriculture. Producing more with less environmental impacts has been not enough to reduce the footprint of agriculture. Vast areas are still being cleared for agriculture, even with efficient farming and intensification. We need to promote sustainable agriculture that provides food supplies, ecosystem services, and climate resilience at the same time. We need better coordination of farm and no-farm natural resource management. And agroforestry is important to develop an efficient land use approach, where trees can be managed together with crops and animal production systems. This will help to diversify and sustain production while increasing social, economic, and environment benefits for land users at all scales, especially the poorest and marginalized population. After COP22 in Marrakech, this is a clear message that myself, I am traveling Wednesday to Cancun, I will pass at COP13 of the Convention on Biological Diversity that will deal with biodiversity. The CBD COP13 will focus on mainstreaming biodiversity in agriculture, forest, and fisheries. This will show that biodiversity and agriculture sectors can go hand in hand to ensure food security and nutrition sustainability. And this has came clearly in all the recommendations coming from our technical committees, COFI, COFO, and COAG, that we need to mainstream biodiversity in agriculture sectors. Dear participants, I welcome you once again, and I wish you a successful event. Thank you for your attention.
Un anno e mezzo fa a Montecitorio noi abbiamo presentato con la nostra fondazione, per la quale lavoriamo su basi volontarie da 25 anni sui temi del cambiamento climatico e dell'ambiente globale, ponendo all'attenzione dell'opinione pubblica piuttosto addormentata sui temi dell'ambiente globale in questo momento storico. Altre sembrano le preoccupazioni dei nostri concittadini dal punto di vista economico, nella società occidentale in particolare. Tre argomenti che credo avessero e abbiano tuttora una grande attualità. Il primo era, alla vigilia degli accordi di Parigi per il clima, la nostra conferenza è avvenuta alla presenza del Ministro degli Esteri, del Ministro dell'Ambiente, la Presidente della Camera dei Deputati, dei rappresentanti del governo francese che guidavano i lavori in vista della COP di Parigi. Abbiamo chiesto tre cose. La prima, gli accordi di Parigi entrino subito in vigore. E gli accordi di Parigi sono entrati in vigore in tempi record. È stato un grande successo della diplomazia internazionale e possiamo usare oggi un paradosso. Spesso la politica è accusata di essere in ritardo rispetto all'opinione pubblica sul tema del cambiamento climatico. La faticosa macchina diplomatica è riuscita ad essere veloce. È entrato in vigore l'accordo di Parigi poche settimane fa, prima di Marrakech, e a Marrakech si è deciso di stabilire le regole di funzionamento. Altra grande preoccupazione, un rischio di aspettare 5 anni prima che i contenuti dell'accordo di Parigi entrassero in vigore, si è deciso che entro il 2017 questo debba avvenire. Nella conferenza di Roma un anno fa abbiamo anche proposto un'iniziativa non del tutto consueta, e cioè che la comunità internazionale iniziasse in parallelo alle politiche stabilite nel quadro del negoziato che avrebbe portato all'accordo di Parigi, la messa fuori, il phasing out, la messa, la sostituzione di alcune sostanze chimiche particolarmente nocive, hydrofluorocarbons, gli idrofluorocarburi, HFCs, ma non sotto non nella cornice degli accordi di Parigi, ma utilizzando la cornice dell'accordo di Montreal per la difesa dell'ozono stratosferico. Questo è avvenuto in una città africana, a Kigali, poche settimane fa, ed è stata un'altra prova brillante della diplomazia internazionale. Cioè si è deciso di affrontare l'eliminazione di alcune sostanze particolarmente nocive in termini di effetto serra. Il terzo tema al centro della nostra conferenza era quello di cui ci occupiamo oggi, siamo molto onorati di poterne parlare qui nella sede della FAO, cioè a dire riportare all'attenzione l'opinione pubblica internazionale il ruolo di agroforestry per la mitigazione in particolare dei cambiamenti climatici e per una visione nuova dal punto di vista del rapporto tra l'uomo e la natura. Abbiamo messo in rilievo l'importanza di contrastare lo spreco alimentare. Ricordo che in Italia si è tenuto lo scorso anno una Expo mondiale a Milano che è stata molto centrata anche sul contrasto allo spreco alimentare. Noi siamo qui nella Casa Mondiale dell'Agroforestry. È per noi romani un onore che questa sede, così come quella di altre organizzazioni internazionali, quali WFP e IFAD, sia a Roma. Permettetemi, come ex sindaco della città, di ricordare che qui ci troviamo in un luogo sensazionale dal punto di vista della storia. A 300 metri in linea d'aria è il Lupercale, ovvero il luogo dove, secondo la leggenda, la lupa ha ospitato e allattato i due gemelli fondatori di Roma, Romolo e Remo. Ma la madre di Romolo e Remo, secondo la leggenda, si chiamava Rea Silvia, e si chiamava Silvia a causa delle foreste, Silva. E se voi trovate i toponimi della Roma antica, scoprirete che le denominazioni originarie Quercetulanus deriva dalle querce. Se guardate un po' in direzione dell'arco di Costantino, vedrete dietro di voi il Fagutal, una sommità che si chiama così per la presenza dei faggi. Ma Roma non è stata una città sostenibile dal punto di vista ambientale, sin dai tempi antichi. Roma è diventata la più grande metropoli del mondo, incontestabilmente, senza alcun paragone possibile nella storia, probabilmente circa 1 milione di abitanti che erano tributari del più strepitoso apparato logistico alimentare della storia antica. Tutto il mondo si ingegnava per sfamare Roma. E dunque questo passaggio dalla condizione originaria delle selve, delle foreste, a quella della antropizzazione più straordinaria nel corso della storia antica nella città di Roma, credo abbia per noi un significato piuttosto simbolico. Io non posso dimenticare nella mia formazione politico-culturale quello che ha ricordato un economista, Amartya Sen, analizzando le carestie e i fenomeni della fame più gravi del corso del XX secolo, ricordando che tutti quei fenomeni sarebbero stati facilmente risolvibili dal punto di vista tecnico, dal punto di vista logistico, dal punto di vista economico, naturalmente, della disponibilità di cibo per le centinaia di milioni di persone che avevano sofferto la fame e la morte, non solo la malnutrizione, la morte per fame nel XX secolo. Questo ci dimostra che la capacità politica può risolvere i problemi e io penso che la capacità politica e la risoluzione delle strozzature che impediscono le soluzioni politiche debba riguardare fortemente ciò che noi chiamiamo, con un acronimo non sempre semplice, AFOLU, ovvero sia Agriculture, Forestry and Other Land Use, quello che riguarda l'oggetto scientifico della conferenza di oggi, ovvero provare a ricostruire un rapporto tra l'amore primigenio che noi abbiamo verso gli alberi, l'agricoltura come fatto basilare della nostra esistenza e la natura, assuma anche un carattere di consapevolezza politica nel contesto dei negoziati internazionali susseguenti all'accordo di Parigi. Personalmente, signora assistente direttore generale, io penso che si possa definire l'accordo di Parigi come la dichiarazione di interdipendenza del XXI secolo, perché è chiamato a occuparsi di tutti i temi economici, finanziari, tecnologici, scientifici, questa è la base naturalmente, commerciali e ovviamente ambientali, energetici. Credo che la conferenza di oggi sarà molto interessante perché ci permetterà di mettere al centro il tema delle foreste, il tema dell'agricoltura, che i cittadini comprendono perché attraversa interamente l'esistenza di ciascuno di noi in termini di proposta politica, perché è vero che se circa la metà dei paesi in via di sviluppo che hanno presentato nel quadro dell'accordo di Parigi i loro NDCs hanno incluso gli aspetti della forestazione e della gestione sostenibile dell'agricoltura tra questi NDCs, è vero che le risorse sono assolutamente sproporzionate ad una realtà che è assolutamente eloquente. Io concludo su questo. Se è vero che questo comparto deve valere tra il 20, secondo IPCC, tra il 20 e il 60% degli sforzi totali di mitigazione, se è vero che circa un quarto delle emissioni totali di CO2 equivalente sono causate da cattiva gestione di forestry e agroforestry, io penso che la comprensibilità, la comunicabilità e la partecipazione dei cittadini, che siano agricoltori, che siano consumatori o che siano opinione pubblica, è cruciale. Ecco perché l'incontro di oggi è promettente ed importante, perché dopo Marrakesh, dove forse Red Plus non ha avuto un ruolo così decisivo, in un contesto in cui l'urbanizzazione di massa porterà le nostre città, nelle quali ogni anno si sposteranno alcuni centinaia di milioni di persone, ad assomigliare molto di più alla disordinata e consumatrice Roma imperiale piuttosto che alla rustica Roma delle origini, e dunque essere inquinanti, e dunque essere insostenibili, e dunque essere un grande fattore di crescita delle emissioni. Noi vogliamo che anche le città siano governate, c'è una grande mobilitazione internazionale, da una politica corretta di gestione del verde, della forestazione, di mitigazione in ambiente urbano, oltre che nei contesti legati alle attività industriali e produttive. Domanda conclusiva: ci salveranno gli alberi? Dobbiamo permettere loro di farlo. Le più recenti inchieste scientifiche dimostrano che dagli alberi, cioè dai sistemi, dagli ecosistemi forestali, vengono delle risposte molto più positive di quanto si pensasse, ad esempio con riferimento agli oceani, come sink e come ciclo di sostenibilità nel rapporto tra emissioni, assorbimento e ulteriori misure che permettano di contrastare i cambiamenti climatici. Nella indizione di questa conferenza noi abbiamo scritto, e qui concludo in lingua inglese, agroforestry is one of the most efficient ways of using lands, and as a land use system in between forest and open field agriculture, it can, with appropriate combinations of trees, crops and livestock, provide a range of goods, benefits and services simultaneously, such as nutritious food, renewable energy and clean water, while conserving biodiversity. These are all very interesting and concrete issues for our today's meeting. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for this invitation, for this event that it's, I think, a point of thinking and reflection, particularly after the Paris Agreement and particularly after the Marrakesh conference that, although it's been considered a little bit of quiet conference, it was a very important moment because there was a sense of urgency that was very, very well developed during the conference, and that I think it's what we need today, a sense of urgency. Okay, I would like to tackle this topic that President Rutelli already very nicely has already given to us, is the question of the tension, the contrast between Ager and Silva, these two Latin names meaning agriculture and forest. And this is very, very, very old contrast and tension since the time of human evolution and the beginning of the human civilization. All the time there were these contrasts for humans that wanted to produce food and so convert natural forest land into agricultural area. And of course, this also was not only for food, but there was also a more feeling of that the forest was something very, very dangerous, very mysterious. There are a lot of legends about forests that where the children are scared about working in the forest alone. You know, that's so. It was a sentiment that it was accompanied all the human civilization, even today. And what I want to basically introduce today is that, yes, indeed, this tension between agriculture and forest continue to happen, and particularly has been accelerated in recent years. I want to show you this graph just to point to the fact that everything is happening in the last more or less 50 years. So we have done most of the problems that today we are discussing, climate change, water resources, food, and so on, because of our behavior in the last 50 years mostly. So in the 50 years' time, we went from 3 billion of people in 1960 to 7.3 billion in 2015. So it's a huge amplification of human growth, and this has accelerated, again, the contrast between the Ager and the Silva, the agriculture and the forest. More and more land has been converted, and we started in 1960 with about 1.7 hectare per capita of land, and today we are at about 0.7. So we have decreased by 50% of the agricultural land per capita. That is also an urgency, as well as the conversion of land, forest to agriculture. You can see here the land use change trend. This goes up to 2000, but you can see again that the 1960 was the milestone, the initial step, where we basically made all big changes. So we are facing this acceleration, and this contrast is very, very, very much evident. And another acceleration, of course, is about agricultural intensification. We went from a contribution of about 2.7 billion tons of CO2 equivalent in 1960. Today we have doubled, so we are about 5.4. So still, and agriculture, well, as an overall, including land use changes, that contribute about 20% of total greenhouse gas emissions. So Again, we have accelerated very much all these processes, including agricultural emissions. On the other hand, by the way, forests are still helping us. And this is important. So the forests that we've seen as mysterious and dangerous and scaring are today really very important for us. Very important because they produce, basically they accumulate carbon dioxide in excess. They are about 30% of accumulation in the forest of what we introduce in the global atmosphere. More than the oceans, as been pointed before. And more importantly, we cannot manage the ocean. It's very difficult to improve carbon sequestration in the ocean. Okay, there are some scientists producing geoengineering of oceans, meaning, for example, fertilizing oceans with irons could maybe stimulate productivity and increase CO2 uptake, but I don't see that these are feasible solutions for solving the climate change problem. Instead, we can manage forests. Instead, we can improve the carbon accumulation. We can improve carbon store, particularly in the soil. And indeed, one of the major results of the forest activity and some of the agriculture, sustainable agriculture practices is to improve the carbon in the soil. Yes, indeed, if you see, most of the forest today, there is, of course, a lot of carbon in the biomass, but there is about 3-4 times more carbon stored in the soil. And so every practice, everything we do, we have to take into consideration that soil in the future can be our hope, possibly, for reducing global warming. The other point, that element that again speak about acceleration and danger and the risk of the future is about this 1.5 degrees challenge. What does it mean? Again, in Marrakesh, there was a starting discussion on the fact that 2 degrees is not enough. Okay, we have a kind of a cascade problems in the Paris Accord. The first one is that all the NDC, all the pledges of the countries are not able to meet the 2 degrees. We are about 3 degrees currently of warming at the end of the century, so it's not yet enough. So we have to do more ambition targets. But again, we are not satisfied with 2 degrees because there are many studies today pointed that even at 2 degrees, many regions of the world will be under danger. First one, of course, the small Pacific Islands. That was the big discussion in Paris, where, of course, they raise up the hands and say, well, in 2 degrees we'll be submerged by water, so the small Pacific Island will not exist anymore with 2 degrees. But also there are other regions of the world, and particularly the Mediterranean region will be hit at 2 degrees. And so the 1.5 degrees challenge is in front of us. And you see from this graph on the blue line, that is the emission pattern. Okay, these are the scenarios of the emissions for the future, but the blue and the orange is the 2 degrees warming, so what we have to do to reach the 2 degrees warming at the end of the century, and the blue ones are what we have to do to reach the 1.5 degrees. And you can see that under the blue lines of emissions, by 2050, we have to reach zero emission. And after 2050, we have to go for negative emissions. Negative emissions means that we have to capture CO2. This means that, okay, there are some technologies like carbon storage and capture from plants, of energy plants, but they are not enough because CO2 is distributed everywhere. I mean, it's impossible to capture all the CO2 and inject into the underground, as these technologies are doing today. So the other way to capture carbon in a more diffuse way is to use forests, fossil synthesis, using forests, using agricultural soils, improve soil carbon. So there is no other ways to do it. So when we want to go for negative emissions, when you see negative emissions in scenarios, somebody try to explain what is negative emissions. Negative emissions means that we have to capture carbon dioxide. And so the only way to do it is to use forests and agriculture. This is why there's a big challenge in front of us. And I said, yes, why 1.5 degrees? Because also Mediterranean region, this is for our Italian mostly and Mediterranean colleagues, there are recent studies showing that even at 2 degrees, we will have important impacts on agricultural production, reduction of most of the crops like wheat, maize, soy, and rice, as well as we will have a water shortage on the order of 20%, 17% actually, according to the two degrees scenario. So it's not only the small Pacific islands that are under the 2 degree danger, but also the Mediterranean region. And so this is asking for more ambition in this big fight for climate protection. And of course, yes, indeed, we need to include in our mitigation targets also agriculture and forestry. This is already well presented. This is a UNEP report, which has to be updated. But basically, you see that forestry and agriculture, they have to contribute not only energy, not only transport, not only industry, but also forestry and agriculture are part of the big challenge of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So forestry, we expect something between 1.3 and 4.2 billions of tons of CO2 equivalent to be reduced, and also almost equivalent coming from the agriculture. And again, if we want to reach the 1.5 degrees target, we need to increase this ambition by 30%. So we are asking still more to the agriculture and forestry sector. And, okay, that's, I think, important, has been mentioned also by Mr. President Rutelli before, that many countries that are today participating to the Paris Agreement, and I think this is very important for the first time, really, that was not for the Kyoto Protocol, a big number, I mean, the vast majority of world countries are part of one agreement, and they are all together decided to do something for climate. That's, I think, a very important milestone, and you see that most of the countries, they include their NDC agriculture. For example, the red ones are that include agriculture in terms of mitigation, and the blue ones are the ones that include agriculture as adaptation, mostly. And the black one were both mitigation and adaptation. So you see the world is very much in the line to use agriculture and forestry as part of their the achievements for the INDC. Particularly the mitigation targets are the blue areas, so most of the world countries are really including agriculture as a mitigation measure. So that's a big challenge. So there are, as we said, the cards are on the table. Now we have to play the cards. And how to implement, how to play the cards is the big question today that also was said before. So we are here as a track of discussions and producing also some suggestions for the future. But now is the time to put in the table what we can really do. And of course, there are many things that are possible. Today, agroforestry is probably the symbol of one of the best practices for increasing carbon sequestration and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And that's there are other practices that are important that here in FAO, there are many experts that have been working and can be very, very helpful to find the right solutions. Also, I would like to introduce the importance of green infrastructure as well. This is probably a minor, I mean, in relation to the agricultural sector in general, forestry sector, but the green infrastructure is the one that we live on. I mean, if you look at urban and peri-urban areas, where the greens are so important for our lives, and will be more and more important in the future, because 80% of population will live in urban areas by 2050. So the green infrastructure, how we improve our greens, how we improve trees, lawns, all the green that we can use for our lives in urban, peri-urban areas, it's also an important element of mitigation and adaptation as well, and we should open a window on that. We should really start to think what kind of practical solution we can include, for example, smart cities for the inclusion of green infrastructure. We also need to provide some more of incentives. Okay, the countries are agreed on that, but what are the incentives we can really put on the table for making big transition to greening, our landscapes? Just an example, ecosystem services. Can we give value for forest, for carbon stored in soils and in forest? This is just an example of for the Italian forest value. We have an area of 10.6 million of hectares of forest, and the GDP of forest sector, the exact GDP, it's almost 1.5 billion of euro per year of the forestry sector as a classical GDP. But if you include the concept of social cost of climate change, what does it mean, social cost? If you include the cost of damages by climate change induced by a ton of CO2, that's a new measure in economy. It's a projection of what we are doing today in terms of pollution for our future generation. And, of course, you can discuss about the discount rate of this. But anyway, we can come up, assuming 3% discount rate, that the social cost will produce a value for the carbon sequestration of the forest that is between 1.9 and 2.9 billion. So it's much more than the classical GDP, sectorial GDP of the forest. The forest itself in Italy produce more wealth in economy than what they produce in terms of GDP, if we introduce the concept of ecosystem services and the social cost. So let's use this concept also to stimulate the conservation, the improvement, the reforestation, whatever we can do, also the carbon preservation in the soil as a value, as a social cost that we can use. And the other question is, again, for agriculture, what is the true value of food? We know today that for producing food, we may use a lot of greenhouse gas emissions. There are some numbers. For example, for wheat, we have about 1.2 kilograms of CO2 equivalent for 1 kilogram of wheat produced. So can we use this information to redirect a little bit also the price of the food? Why a food that costs, why food that pollute, that produce greenhouse gas emissions should cost less than a food that has high quality and that's more sustainable? So the true value, what is the true value? So we have to internalize what is today external to the GDP. That's, I think, a big challenge. I understand that I see many people here that are not agree with me, I understand, because it's a very, critical, especially for big agro-industry countries. But let's make a reflection on that. And finally, I also would like to reconcile the dangerous forest and the precious agriculture in what we can call a landscape approach. That is, remember we use the Kyoto Protocol for accounting for land use change and forestry. Still, we are using that. Unfortunately, we'll say we are using the land divided by activities. Okay, so we account for activities, but not accounting for the land itself. So why don't we go back a little bit, and because we are discussing this also in the Paris implementation, to the landscape accounting. That means we can include in one specific area, region, district, whatever we want to use as a unit, as a geographical unit, the combination of what is the carbon sequestration, maybe from forests, from grasslands, and what are carbon emission or greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture. So we can put these things together because at the end, they are a landscape. You can see Italy, for example. You have agricultural farms in the middle of hills, in the middle of beautiful forests. They are all together. They are actually, in terms of biology and nature, most of the impollination, the biodiversity is moving from forest to agriculture and vice versa, animals moving from one field to another. So this is the real concept of landscape, and if we account for greenhouse gas emission at the landscape, we can come out very interesting things. For example, livestock. Livestock are today the danger for the climate. Okay, people are scared about using animals. But if they are included in the landscape account, maybe they be compensated by the virtual, by the forest, by the carbon sequestration of the farm in other sectors. So if we include all these components of landscape, maybe at the end, a livestock farming can be also a zero-emission farming, a zero-emission farming. So let's work on this, try to reconcile these two important elements, and I think also technically and scientifically it's today possible. Actually, it's much more valid because at the end, the atmosphere doesn't see the single economic activity. We cannot divide the land by activities. The atmosphere see a land, see the planet land. And what we have to do is to reduce the emissions at the level of the global land, not by activities. I think I have finished. And my conclusions are that, first of all, the discussion is to move from 2 degrees to 1.5 degrees. Again, agriculture and forestry are key player of this transition from 2 to 1.5. Big challenge, acceleration, and we need to have negative emissions. Negative emissions can be only affordable sustainably with agriculture and forestry. The economic incentives, yes, we should start to put in our economic accounting the ecosystem services. It's very important. It's an incentive for the market, for institutions, for companies to be more involved in the fight of global warming. The climate protection is not only a question of energy. It was said by President Rutelli. It's not only a question of energy. This is a big mistake if we think that climate protection is only to go through energy. It has to be really a collective effort of all the human sectors that are contributing to that. And finally, as I said before, should change the way which we do the accounting. We should go for landscape accounting because this is, I think, scientifically is the most rigorous way to do it, and at the same time is a really great opportunity for compensating different agriculture and forest activities, and this can create opportunities for all the farming to become more sustainable for the future, contribute each of the farming system, even livestock, contribute to the future of our greenhouse gas emissions. Thank you.